Hello, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Evan Brand. Thanks for joining me. I'm a certified functional medicine practitioner. I operate worldwide helping people get to the root cause of their health problems, not giving you band-aids and other garbage that you don't need to fix the issue. Today, I'm going to be posting an episode here that I did with Dr. Ryan Wolfert, and he interviewed me for a summit that was called the Superhuman Brain Masterclass, which is a pretty cool name. And I was one of the featured speakers on there. My talk ended up getting voted one of the top talks, which was awesome. And the title of the talk is Causes of Brain Dysfunction and Incorporating Nootropics. So we talk about some of the common causes of brain dysfunction, how to fix it, foods to improve brain function and performance, and then we talk a bit about nootropics, which are essentially nutrients for the brain, supplements for the brain. And there's a lot of terms out there in the supplement world, people calling supplements nootropics, but they're not actually truly nootropic. So we'll get into that today. I'll keep it nice and short on this intro. Let's get right into it. If you want to reach out, schedule a call with me. I work with people around the world. I would love to help you get your brain, your body working better. You can find all the information about that at my site, evanbrand.com. Here we go.
Brain fog, anxiety, depression, ADD, memory loss, Alzheimer's, dementia, and Parkinson's. All of these brain conditions rob you of your focus, productivity, performance, and life. And they're all on the rise. I'm Dr. Ryan Wolfert, and this is the Superhuman Brain Masterclass, where you'll learn everything you need to go from brain dysfunction, disease, and disorders to a productive, high-performing mind. With that, I want to welcome Evan. How you doing, Evan?
Dr. Ryan, thanks for having me. I'm doing good.
Great. You know, we're going to jump right into it because I know everybody listening wants to get some answers. But before we can give them answers on how to correct any brain dysfunction they might have exhibiting themselves with a myriad of symptoms, first we have to find out what are the main causes of brain dysfunction leading to these symptoms? So can you answer that for me?
I would say the simple answer is toxins, but I could open up a whole can of worms and that could be a whole hour just trying to identify all the toxins that we're up against. So this could be anything from antibiotics, which we know damage mitochondria. Mitochondria power all of the cells in your body, and this includes your heart, your brain. This could be various environmental toxins like glyphosate and other pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, insecticides, miticides. This could be hair dye. This could be nail polish. This could be xylene and benzene. This could be a chemical called MTBE for short, or ETBE, which is a gasoline additive that we use after we took out lead. Everyone said, great, gas is now unleaded, because it took a long time for scientists to really ring the bell about lead and for the industry to change. However, when we remove lead, we added other chemicals to the gasoline that are just as bad, which is why I purchased an electric car, because I don't want to pump gas anymore. Because when I run many, many, many clients per week, their urine through a test called a GPL tox, I see all these toxic chemicals and they're off the charts. And I've talked with Dr. William Shaw, the guy who invented this laboratory, and I said, you know, how long do these chemicals last in the body? I said, let's say I stop pumping gas now, and 5 years later, am I still going to have that in my body? He says, I don't know. He says, we haven't been able to study these chemicals long enough. And so you get someone who's 50, 60, 70, they're starting to have focus issues, attention problems, memory problems. They walk into the room, they can't remember what they went into the room for. You're my best friend, but for some reason I can't get your name out of my mouth right now. This is a result of toxins. Now, of course, there's a gut component to this, which hopefully we can hit on some today, but I would say the biggest needle mover is toxins. And it's not to say you need to live in a bubble. I mean, that would be awesome. But I believe you just have to coexist with the toxins in the world, but you have to do your best to avoid them. So me, I moved out to the countryside. Actually, there's a turkey and, oh my God, there's like six babies. I got to take a picture of this. There's a turkey and like six babies walking through my field. So that's one reason that I got out of the city. And another reason is because I wanted to avoid the toxins, because when I lived in the city, we used to live by a major highway. You would smell the diesel from the semi trucks, you know, coming from the highway into our home. And so my wife and I, you know, we said, okay, if we're going to be raising a child, we have a 2-year-old little girl. I said, we've got to get out. So that's what we did.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, toxins, you know, they come in a lot of different forms though, right?
Yep.
So even, the food that you eat, well, that's a big part of it too, is the food that you eat, the air that you breathe, the stuff that you put on the skin, even stuff that you wouldn't even think about, or the layperson wouldn't even think about, like the gas, like you had talked about. You just think it's a normal day-to-day thing where you pump your gas, no big deal. You know, I just read something where it's like, well, if you smell the gas, well, you know you're already exposed to it. So a simple shift is just move downwind, so it's not getting into your nose, getting into your brain. So yes, that toxins is huge. And like you said, it's not like we can avoid every single toxin, but we have to coexist with it.
Yeah. And you know, it's hard. It's hard because for me, knowing all the dangers of these things, I just did a podcast with Stephanie Seneff. She's an MIT researcher who's been studying glyphosate and talked all about what glyphosate does to the brain and how it replaces glycine molecules and proteins, making them undigestible. And she's tracking the rates of autism going up, and it correlates perfectly with the use of glyphosate, which in the United States alone, we spray over 300 million pounds of glyphosate per year, which if you're buying quote unquote conventional food, it really should be called chemical. But if you're buying conventional food, meaning something that's not marked organic, you can assume that it's sprayed. And I encourage people to look up the Environmental Working Group, because every year they do a study and they look at produce and they give you a list. If someone says, I literally cannot afford organic, which a lot of those people are the same people who have a cable TV, the brand new iPhone, a 65-inch TV, a brand new Mercedes SUV, and they say they can't afford organic. So if that's you, I'm not judging you. I'm just saying you got to make sure your priorities are in check, because when I was making $10 an hour and I had no money left over at the end of the month, everything I was purchasing was organic because I knew how important it was to avoid glyphosate. But what it's doing is, it's also damaging the gut barrier. And so and I'm sure many of the speakers may hit on this, but when you have a leaky gut situation, this is intestinal permeability, where you take the tight junctions in your gut. This is a one cell lining and you open those apart. This can be done by glyphosate, even at parts per billion levels. It can kill beneficial bacteria. And when you have a leaky gut, you also have a leaky brain. And when we talk about these toxins, now these toxins have direct access into the brain. And so you're like, okay, I'm avoiding as much as I can. But if you go and you stand at the gas station and everyone around you is pumping gas, I'm just using that example because I think it's relevant. You're breathing in all that stuff, but it's not just going into the system and then you're peeing or pooping it out. It's likely going and storing into the brain. You combine that with silver fillings, which that's about 50% mercury, give or take, in a silver filling in your mouth. So if you still do have silver fillings in your mouth, and you've got a leaky gut and a leaky brain, that mercury is going to the brain. So every time you do a hot coffee in the morning, a great cup of Joe in the morning, you're starting to leach and pull. Even if it's micrograms, it doesn't matter. It adds up over time. You're leaching mercury out of your teeth and it's going into the brain. And also it can store into your bones and things like that. But for this context of the topic today, I think knowing that the heavy metals can go to the brain is important. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned like a lot of speakers are going to be talking about nutrition, and you mentioned leaky brain. I'm actually going to, Dr. Tom O'Brien is speaking about that. So you're definitely going to want to, the listeners are definitely going to want to catch that, because we hear a lot about leaky gut. Leaky brain is very similar to that, and they pretty much go together. Now, when somebody has brain dysfunction, you know, I mentioned some symptoms at the start, but in your professional, the patients that you see, what are some common symptoms that people will get when their brain, either a leaky brain or their brain is not functioning optimally?
Well, one that I'm going to mention, because not many people are going to say it, everybody's going to say all the boring stuff like focus, attention, memory problems. It's like, okay, duh. But you know what I'm noticing with people is that they're also becoming more sensitive to environmental toxins. So this is like the canary in the coal mine. So this is the person who perfume or cologne or synthetic fragrances, air fresheners, things like that irritates them far more than it used to, or far more than someone else. And I believe some of that's natural. I mean, I'm sensitive to fragrances myself, but I think it's because I try so hard to avoid synthetic fragrances. But when you're to the point where somebody walks past you with perfume and it triggers a migraine headache, to me, your stress bucket, your toxin bucket is full. And you've likely got to work on some detoxification strategies, doing some daily liver support, you know, potentially coffee enemas, something else that can help to remove the toxins out of your bucket, because that one little perfume smell is overflowing you, and then you get the manifestation of symptoms.
Now, I mean, you just led right into the next question. That was beautiful. You mentioned a couple of things, detoxification strategies. What are some other things, you know, a few things, I don't want to overwhelm everybody, but like maybe three of the top things that you would recommend people to do to help basically fix their brain?
I would say one is remove the source as much as you can. So if you have let's say females, for example, females are probably our primary listener to this, because I know this because most of my clients are female, probably 80% of it, because only 20% of males admit something's wrong and the other 80% are lying. But so females specifically, I tell all, you know, wives, moms, et cetera, that I talk with, I say, let your husband pump gas. You know, females are more sensitive to toxins. Generally speaking, they're smaller. So if you have a smaller bucket, those toxins fill up that bucket more. And we know with women's hormonal fluctuations, they're more sensitive to thyroid issues like Hashimoto's, which has a toxin component to it. So if you're a female, you know, if you're not going to sell your car and buy a Tesla or another electric car, then get your husband to pump your gas. You know, that's step one, okay? Because you're going to avoid a huge amount of toxins. We know that those gasoline additives damage the nervous system, and that damages the brain cells. The neurotoxins, they kill brain cells. You can regenerate brain cells, which is great, but you don't want to kill them off, because if you're taking all these great foods and supplements into your body and your diet, but the seesaw is still slanted towards you being exposed to more toxins, you could take all the supplements in the world and not get better. So I would say step one is you first have to identify the sources. And then step two is to get away from them. So if you live in a rural area and you're surrounded by farms, you know, I had one client in California, she lived in the valley where all the vegetables are grown for the US. And she remembers being a kid and just getting bombed with the planes that were spraying glyphosate overhead. So she'd be playing out in the field and a low flying plane would come over and boom and spray her. So that's insane. You can't live in that area. You can just look up glyphosate map USA for all the USA listeners and look. And most of the states east of the Mississippi are going to be very, very, very heavily sprayed. And once again, this doesn't mean live in a bubble. This just means in terms of your zip code, it matters. Your zip code matters. Where you live matters. And if you're in an agricultural area, you're in the middle of Illinois, and all your neighbors are growing corn and soybean, which is genetically modified and sprayed, you got to move, because no amount of supplements I'm going to mention are going to be able to get rid of that. So that's like step one and two. And then step three would be start adding in some things that you can support your brain with. So blueberries, that's like my go-to. If I were to say, hey, there's one magic food that's going to be the magic food for your brain, it's going to be blueberries. And this is so much of a powerful tool that some of the professional healthcare companies that I use, they actually have a blueberry extract inside of their formulas. And I would say another herb or another fruit/herb that people want to look into would be like green tea extract, specifically the decaffeinated version, which is usually called EGCG. And that has a huge amount of benefit for the brain, mainly as an antioxidant. Because when you're exposed to toxins, you're creating free radicals. Those free radicals damage brain cells. So you want to try to counteract that by using polyphenols, like in good fruits, and then antioxidants in some of like the green tea extracts. And then I would say a favorite herb of mine would be huperzine. Huperzine usually comes from club moss. I think there's other plants in the kingdom that also have huperzine, but huperzine is a compound that I know for sure is in a club moss. And what it does is it's an acetylcholinesterase inhibitor. So acetylcholine is our neurotransmitter that many people don't talk about. Many people talk about dopamine and serotonin. A lot of people know those, but many people don't know about acetylcholine. And as we age and as we get exposed to toxins, we make less and less acetylcholine throughout the years. The more toxins, the more age, the less acetylcholine. So what huperzine does is it's acetylcholine, and then it's esterase inhibitor, meaning there's an enzyme in our bodies that breaks down acetylcholine. So just like how with an antidepressant, the goal of an SSRI is to keep the existing serotonin in the brain in the synapse longer, the receptor site longer, it's the same thing with huperzine, except it's doing it for acetylcholine as opposed to serotonin. So if you can inhibit the enzyme that's breaking down acetylcholine, even if your acetylcholine levels are suboptimal, you're going to leave those brain chemicals in the brain longer, therefore your brain's going to work better. So huperzine's like my go-to. And then usually I stack that with like a green tea extract. And then I'll usually do something like a vinpocetine, which comes from the periwinkle plant. And that's spelled V-I-N-P-O-C-E-T-I-N-E, vinpocetine. And that's a vasodilator. So what that does is that just helps brain the brain and the blood flow in the brain work better. So if someone's been diagnosed with some type of cognitive performance issue, whether it is something severe like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, et cetera, vinpocetine is something that should definitely be thought about, should definitely be in the toolbox. And then usually some type of a dopamine support. So when we talk about these major cognitive issues, a pharmaceutical drug is always going to be put on board, which I'm not a fan of pharmaceuticals. If we can use herbs that work just as good, I'm a big fan. So the one that most people get put on is levodopa. Mm-hmm. And you can also use something instead that works just as good without side effects. And it's called Macuna purins. And it comes from the, I believe it's called the velvet bean or the velvet bean seed. But I know velvet's in the word. That's where it comes from. And I believe it's from a tree.
Okay.
But what that does is it acts just like levodopa, except it's herbal in terms of containing L-dopa, which is the precursor to dopamine. So when you're talking about brain health, you've got all these different neurotransmitters, and it's a big spider web. So you can come in and you can support your acetylcholine by using the huperzine. And you can come in and you can do the polyphenols and the antioxidants with the green tea and the wild blueberry. But then you want to come in and support dopamine too. Because if you crank up your memory, but you can't crank up your focus and your drive, it's kind of like a car that's got a few new spark plugs, but not all new spark plugs. So you want to try to hit all new plugs. And then that's where something like the Macuna purins would come in to hit dopamine. And then also, usually I stack a little bit of L-tyrosine on there too, which is an amino acid. And tyrosine can directly influence catecholamine levels, which includes dopamine, norepinephrine, and epinephrine. These are the endorphins. And we can measure all of this before we do any of this, right? So These are just like the quick fixes, but it's always smarter to work with a practitioner who can test you for this stuff. I use a test called the Organic Acids Panel from Great Plains Laboratory. And that's where we can look at the metabolites, which is the breakdown products of your brain chemicals. It's not very accurate to measure neurotransmitters directly. Your practitioner may try to sell you on a neurotransmitter test. They're not very accurate. But what is more accurate is measuring the metabolites, meaning the breakdown products, which is the equivalent of taking your car in for emissions testing. So you're measuring the tailpipe, so to speak, which in this case of a human, it's the urine. And you can see the breakdown products. So when you look at something called homovanillate, this is a marker that's going to tell you, okay, what does the dopamine level actually look like? And then that's how you can know, hey, dopamine is your issue. Let's supplement with tyrosine. Or you can look and say, serotonin is your problem. Let's supplement with tryptophan or 5-hydroxytryptophan. And so when you have the clinical data, you can be much more accurate with your protocols and you actually spend less money in the long run because you're actually finding the root cause first, rather than just throwing a bunch of supplements you found at Whole Foods in the brain health category in your shopping cart and assuming you're going to get better.
Wow, that's amazing. Dude, you gave way above the value there. So they're getting a lot. I mean, if you just took those few tips, holy cow, you got your money's worth with this masterclass, but we're going to give you more. Now, you mentioned a few of those like L-tyrosine, and you wrote the book, The Everything Guide to Nootropics. So let's get into that because it's a good segue because you mentioned a few nutrients. I want to call them chemicals, but
natural chemicals is fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, are those like a few of those that you mentioned, would those be constituted as nootropics or is that something different? What exactly are nootropics? Because that's, you know, a buzzword that people hear a lot with brain health and brain performance nowadays.
Yeah, good question. It is a buzzword. And unfortunately, the term nootropic or some pronounce it nootropic, I believe that's how you're supposed to say it, but I say nootropic, But I think it's nootropic anyhow. So I got hired from a publishing company to write a book on this a few years ago. And basically what I found in the literature is that because of the word being abused and overused so much, you've got a lot of people that are selling supplements that they call nootropics or nootropics that really aren't. And so there's a certain set of rules or standards that must apply to have that label attached to it. And so there was a Romanian psychologist and a chemist back in the 70s who came up with this term, and it came from the Greek words nous, N-O-U-S, which means mind, and trepan, meaning to bend or turn. So basically, it's a mind-bending supplement. And now caffeine, for example, could technically be considered a cognitive enhancer. We know that caffeine can increase your focus and attention. I personally don't do caffeine. I'm just too sensitive to it. But a lot of people do. That's the most widely used and abused drug on the entire planet. It is a drug. People don't want to admit their coffee is a drug, but it is, and that's fine. But it has downsides to it. It does have addiction potential. I mean, take somebody who drinks coffee every day and just tell them coffee doesn't exist anymore. There's a worldwide ban of coffee. They're going to freak out. They're not going to be able to handle it. They're going to get headaches and all sorts of withdrawal symptoms. So therefore, that is not a true nootropic or nootropic, because a true nootropic is something that does not have addiction and does not have side effects. So it has to be like a miracle supplement, basically. It has to work great. It has to increase brain function, but it can't have downsides. It can't have addiction, and it can't have side effects. And so caffeine fails that test. It's still a nervous system stimulant. And with the nootropics, you don't necessarily have to stimulate the nervous system. You don't have to crank yourself up where if you do too much, you're going to run into anxiety territory. You know, that's not something good. There are chemical nootropics that are on the market. And I don't think they should have that term applied to them either, because there are downsides to that too. So that's like the amphetamine category. You know, you have so many children now with ADD and ADHD, and they're getting put on low dose amphetamines to try to help them focus in school. That's not good. I mean, if you look at the chemical or the molecular makeup, you look at methamphetamine, and then you look at an amphetamine like an Adderall or a Vyvanse that people are being prescribed, and adults are taking these too, it's a very similar molecular structure. So we can't say you're taking meth, but it's so close to doing meth that I would not touch it at all. Nicotine, you know, that's going to be another one that could technically be considered a cognitive enhancer, but does have addiction potential. Even people, you know, I've heard of several famous authors, I can't think of the names now, but just reading, you know, reading through the literature from my book, of people that were chewing on nicotine gum while they were writing their book to increase their attention and their working memory. Now, the true nootropics are like the RaceTams, the RasTams. So the number one, and this is actually what this guy, I believe his name was Cornelio, I can't remember his last name. It was a weird last name, but he was the guy who coined the term. He's the one who invented piracetam. And this was back in 1964, and he synthesized piracetam. So it is man-made, but he found that it had no addiction potential, and it was great for increasing brain function. And that was my first exposure, piracetam. It's spelled P-I-R-A-C-E-T-A-M. And anytime you see the T-A-M at the end, that means that it is a RasTam. And this is a family that can include oxiracetam, aniracetam, and others. And those are, you know, those are the true nootropics. And those do modulate a lot of different things in the brain. Other things that are more, I would say, less of a heavy hitter, but still great. We mentioned the tyrosine. That could be a cognitive enhancer. We mentioned the blueberry complex. We mentioned the Bacopa. No, I didn't mention Bacopa, but Bacopa's in my mind. Bacopa is a flower. That's also a really good brain enhancer. And then I would say theanine is probably like my go-to, because theanine is going to be coming from green tea, especially if you do a matcha tea. Matcha is the same plant as green tea, except it's grown a bit differently. I believe what they do is they cover it from the sun, and that stresses the plant out. So then it causes it to make even more antioxidants and more theanine. So if you do matcha tea versus green tea, it's like green tea on steroids. You're going to get some caffeine, a small amount, but it's going to also have theanine, which is an amino acid that can be really, really helpful for, first of all, calming people. Theanine's great for anxiety problems. But if you stack these two together, caffeine and theanine, typically like a 2-to-1 ratio. So that would mean if you did 200 milligrams caffeine, you did 100 milligrams L-theanine, you're going to feel really calm, but alert and focused. And for someone who's never done theanine with coffee, you need to try it, because I guarantee you're going to get more done. Because coffee, what it does is it cranks up your brain, but it does it too much. It pushes you over the edge. So now you've got so much energy and so much on your mind, you don't know what to do with yourself. So theanine can kind of come in and say, okay, calm down. And then you're able to focus a little bit more, like you've got blinders on, versus with coffee. Some people describe it as you want to do everything at the same time. And theanine is that settling factor that's like, okay, let's be alert, but let's be focused.
Now, would lion's mane or the mushrooms, would those be considered nootropics or nootropics?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. Lion's mane is huge. I mean, it's one of my favorite mushrooms. I take it relatively often. Reishi mushroom could be helpful as well. Reishi is more of like an immune modulator, but reishi would still be great. And a lot of times I just do a complex mushroom. So I may do like a maitake, a shiitake, a reishi, a lion's mane, a cordyceps mushroom. Some could argue cordyceps would be a great enhancer too. Mainly it's geared more towards athletes, you know, physical performance, but cordyceps does have a unique ability to increase the oxygen that can get into the cells. So yeah, I would say mushroom should be part of this too.
All right. Now, so let's say someone, you know, they're finding the cause of their brain dysfunction. They're finding, you know, they're getting out in a more of a rural area and away from pesticides though. And they're addressing the needs that they have with their nutrition, with their sleep, with all those different aspects of health, with their mindset. And they want to take it to the next level. Now, is that where nootropics pretty much come in? You would suggest that at that point? And not necessarily, all right, somebody listening to this, you're, you know, 50 pounds overweight, you work too much, you sleep too little. Would you recommend nootropics for that individual?
Yeah, great point. I'm glad you brought that up because I was kind of thinking in my mind, I did a little prep in my brain beforehand. I thought, you know what, I need to make sure I hit on the fact that you can't out-supplement a bad lifestyle because many people want the magic pill. And myself included, it'd be great to have some silver bullet that has all these different things in it. And it's going to be the magic cure. All you got to do is take this pill and you're going to get everything done you ever wanted to do. And your life's going to be beautiful. And that's not true at all. If you're not sleeping, your brain's not going to work. Sleeping is the best nootropic and it's free. You just have to do it. And I tell people, I mean, I speak with people, you know, on a daily basis, 10 to 15 clients a day, and half of them are on their screens way too much at night. They're checking their phone, they're checking their tablet, they're checking their computer one last time, see if any new social media update came in right before I go to bed. As soon as you do that, you're telling your brain that it's high noon and your body is shutting down melatonin production. And melatonin is one of the most potent antioxidants. It's not just a sleep hormone. Melatonin can help fight cancer. Just type in night shift nurses breast cancer. Look at the research. You see that women who work night shift, especially this was in a nurse study, a 50% higher incidence of breast cancer because you're sleeping during the day and you're working at night and you're not designed to do that. So if you're working a swing shift or third shift, you can't out-supplement that. You need to be getting up with the sun and going to bed with the sun as much as you can. Now, certain people are going to yell at me and say, oh, Evan, how rude. My job forces me to do these hours. Okay, well, if you can't find another job, then maybe you just supplement and try to get through it as much as you can. I used to work third shift to pay for my college at UPS, and I worked from midnight to 5 a.m., and it was absolutely terrible, and my brain function was terrible, no matter how many supplements I took. So yeah, I really do agree with you that you've got to address the low-hanging fruit. You've got to make sure that your weight's healthy. You've got to make sure that you're moving. I mean, how are you going to have blood flow to the brain if you're not moving? I mean, it's so simple. So 15-minute walk in the morning, 15-minute walk in the evening, very, very safe, gentle prescription for exercise. Everyone can do that. And if you can't because you say you don't have time, well, then you got a bigger issue on your hands, which is you got to figure out how to get the time to do this stuff. Whether you got to set an alarm and get up 15 minutes earlier, or whether you got to push your work schedule 15 minutes later, if you don't have time for 15 minutes, you know, there's like that proverb that people talk about with meditation. They say, if you don't have an hour to meditate, then you need two. You know, that's the same concept here. Yeah. So if you're go, 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 you're constantly in fight or flight, you're running from a bear, your bills, your boss, et cetera, your email inbox, I'm sorry, but I don't think you're going to supplement your way out of this. You've got to have a really good reality, a really good foundation of nurturing yourself, spending time in nature, et cetera. And once you've got all that dialed in, your diet's as close to 100% organic, you're moving, you're getting sunlight, you're getting, you know, good social relationships. We now know that social isolation is as bad as smoking cigarettes. So you got to have a friend or two or three. You got to have some family members that you can confide in. Once you have all that, now you're ready for this. You know, the brain health 201, but you can't skip brain health 101 and go straight to 201. You can, but if you want long-term success, then you got to make sure you address all that stuff first.
And that's what it's all about. It's long-term success. We get caught up in the short-term, I hate the word fixes because it's not fixing anything. And it trains your brain that, oh, it's getting fixed. But, you know, there is no 21-day fix. There is no 2-month fix or whatever it is. It's the sustained, consistent progress that you make every day, taking care. I call them the 5 pillars of health: your focus, your food, your fitness, your function, and your refresh, which is your sleep. And like you said, most of these are free. Going out for a walk, that's free. So people complain about time or money many of the times when, again, it's, you know, obviously walking, sleeping, those are both free. But then they say, well, it's the time. But when people are too busy, again, it just creates more busyness. And then they lose sight of what's important instead of, they realize once they fix what's important, which is their health, their brain, they're going to be able to get more done in a shorter period of time. Right?
That's right. Yeah. And sometimes it involves saying no. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it involves canceling obligations. Sometimes if you're volunteering for your children's school and you're doing this and that on the side and you're doing your, you know, crochet group and you're playing chess and doing all this and that, sometimes you've got to just start snipping all of the things on your calendar until your calendar becomes more manageable. Mm-hmm. So some of this just involves time management, which I find most people are just pretty terrible at. And so for me, I've had to learn the hard way. You know, I burned myself out several times, you know, trying to write books and see clients in the clinic. And I do a weekly podcast I've done for 6 years without missing a beat. You know, I'm on that tightrope as well of, okay, I want to spend time with my family and my daughter, but also I want to succeed and I want to reach more people and I want to help more people and I want to spread the message further about this information. So I walk a tightrope myself, and sometimes I jump off of the tightrope, and like I did this past weekend, you know, I took a couple extra days off, had like a good 4 or 5 day weekend, and I'm super refreshed. My brain is so much better than it was last week. And I didn't take any supplements to feel this good. I just took time off. So sometimes the best thing for your brain is just a vacation. Mm-hmm. You just have to schedule it. And there's the people in the back of the head saying, Evan, that costs money too. Okay, do a staycation, stay at your house. You know, you can do a staycation for free. But I think that you just have to be honest with yourself. And you know, like when you ask, okay, how do you know something's off? You know. You just know that something's off. And so you have to just try to sit down and you make a list. Okay, what are the stressors I'm up against right now? Okay, I'm going to retire in the next few years, but I'm not ready to retire yet. Okay, can you cut the workload down a little bit? Can you delegate some of your work to someone else? Can you hire an assistant to help you with some of the work? You know, what are the things that, instead of trying to improve your brain to do it, what about using someone else's brain to do it? So trying to outsource stuff, you know, I had this, I wouldn't call it a control issue, but I was for a long time assuming I had to be responsible for everything. So I had to do the podcast piece. I had to do the back end of my website. I had to do this and that and that and that. And I put 50 different tasks on my plate, plus seeing clients. And then eventually I thought, this is so silly. There's probably someone else that could help me to do this. And so I hired an assistant and she takes care of all of the stuff that I shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. And that I can use her brain instead. And then I use my brain for my clients. That way I'm fully present and I'm not thinking about, oh, I need to update this plugin on my website so the website works properly. I don't need to be thinking about that stuff. So this doesn't apply to everyone, but I know there are many CEOs and entrepreneurs and such that are going to be listening to this. So mm-hmm. If you have something on your plate that's a repetitive task, meaning you do it often, and you can outsource it. You got to outsource it because that's bandwidth that is being wasted. Think of your internet browser with 20 tabs open. You got to start closing some of those tabs.
That's a great example right there. I think that people can picture and relate to. It's a great analogy how if you got all those tabs up on the browser. I know with my computer, it slows down. And I know with my brain, when there's too much on it, if I don't meditate at least once a day, it just gets loaded in there. It's like overfilling a garbage can, and then it just keeps overflowing, and you gotta empty it, or else it's just gonna fill up the whole house. Then,
yeah.
Now, we got a few minutes left. Is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners that you would think would be important to, you know, create the superhuman brain? You said, like you said, there's CEOs, there's a lot of entrepreneurs listening, high performers. Can you give them any other words of wisdom? I know we've already went over a lot, but if there's anything in the back of your mind that you're like, you know what, I want to touch on this, I want you to tell them.
I would say hydration is very simple but overlooked. And this is because all the CEOs and entrepreneurs I work with, they're pounding the coffee, and that's a diuretic, or they're pounding the tea or the yerba mate, you know, something like that. And that is a diuretic. So for example, if you wake up and you have an 8-ounce cup of coffee, which most people have cups bigger than that. Let's just say you had an 8-ounce cup of coffee this morning, and then you follow it with a cup of water. Let's say it was an 8-ounce cup of water. You're at zero. So the coffee takes you to -8, and then the 8-ounce cup of water brings you back to zero. So you're like, oh yeah, I had a cup of water. No, you didn't. You had a cup of coffee. So you were -8 ounces. The 8-ounce water brought you back to zero. Now you're still at zero. And now it's 12 or 1 p.m. and you haven't had anything else. And maybe you're going to have a second cup of coffee. So now you're going to go from zero back to -8 again. And then you're wondering why your brain doesn't work. And it's because it's dehydrated. I mean, we're 60 to 70% water as a human. You're 60 to 70% water. Our brain is largely made of fat. So you've got to have the good fats in your diet too, which I'm not going to get too much into that because to me it's boring. I've had thousands of hours of training of nutrition, but it just gets boring. Eat your good fats. You know that. Your nuts and seeds. Come on, your pecans, your pumpkin seeds, your avocados, your avocado oils, your pastured meats, which are going to contain omega-3s, which are great for the brain. Your cold water fish that's going to be low in mercury and high in selenium. Of course, all of those things apply, but hydration is so simple and no one does it. Like, you'll see the people carrying around the water, but maybe they're not actually drinking it. So maybe you look cool with your fancy like stainless steel water bottle, but are you actually drinking it? Just keep track of that. And if you are doing teas and coffee, you have to counteract that. So remember, think of it as a negative. So if it's a 16-ounce cup of coffee, now you're -16. So you've got to drink a good 32 ounces of water to get to +16. And the ideal goal is somewhere around half of your body weight in ounces per day. So if you weigh, let's just say you weigh 200 pounds, 100 ounces of water, and people are going to say, my Lord, that's a lot. I'm going to be peeing all day. No, you won't. Your bladder will eventually get used to it and it'll learn how to regulate itself better. And then there's also this argument out there. I always like to call out the haters because it's very helpful to shut these arguments down quickly. Mm-hmm. Oh, our ancestors didn't drink that much water. They weren't just sipping on water bottles all day. Yeah, but they also weren't surrounded by electronics and they were getting dehydrated all day. They didn't have cell phone towers. They didn't have Wi-Fi. They didn't have Bluetooth headsets around their neck. They didn't have electronic equipment. They didn't live indoors. They were not as stressed as us on a 24/7 basis. They had small stressors like running from a bear or, you know, hunting a bear. And then their life was relatively peaceful. They worked 18 hours a week. The average hunter-gatherer, we work an average of 40 hours a week, you know? So it's not apples to apples. And also they didn't have as many toxins. And the solution to pollution is dilution. And so we have more toxins, therefore we need more dilution, therefore we need more water to help. Because if think about, you've got a big old bucket and you've got just a few drops of the toxin in there. Not as big of a deal as if your bucket turns into a shot glass. If you have a shot glass and you've got those same three drops of toxins in there, that toxin to water ratio is much different versus you've got a big bucket. So that's why the water is important. And the people to say, oh, our ancestors didn't drink that much. Okay, maybe they didn't, but their world is so different than ours.
Wow. That, I mean, right there, that was amazing. Because you, I mean, you hit it right on the head. Now, as I wrap up, where can our listeners find out more about you?
Check out my site, evanbrand.com. It's E-V-A-N, last name Brand, like brand name, evanbrand.com. You could just Google my name. You'll find the podcast. I've got almost 300 episodes. I've been doing it every week since 2012. Wow. So becoming kind of a grandpa in the health podcast world, which is pretty cool because there's new podcasts every week. But I argue that mine is one of the best because I'm a clinician that's actually sharing some of the case studies and some of the protocols and things that I'm using. Nothing against the people in the health space, but there's a lot of people with credentials that aren't actually practicing. Mm-hmm. And that creates a lot of theory that gets promoted. So I read this study, which says this, so therefore it must be true. Like last week, this whole study came out, low carb diets, you know, shorten your lifespan. And it's just this complete bunk science. But someone who has these letters after their name could look at a study and then promote it to all of their followers as true. But when you're in the clinic, you're going to find that things that are in the literature don't exactly match up to reality. And so you learn so much more from your clients, more than any book, any course, any this or that, any certification I've ever had. I learned 10 times more from working with people. What works? What doesn't work? What did you try? What did this practitioner do for you? Oh, this supplement did that? I thought it was supposed to do this. Oh, what happened when you went to bed an hour earlier? Your brain's 20% better? Oh, and then what happened when we tested your gut and we cleared out these parasite infections? That alone made your brain work better? So That is, to me, something that is important when you're looking for someone that is, you know, helping you. Is someone who maybe they have the cool letters after their names and they sound smart and they look pretty and they have nice white teeth. Great. But also, are they working with people? Because to me, if I had no letters after my name, which I have a handful of them, if I had no letters after my name, to me, the clinical experience would counteract the lack of those letters. Like if my letters just disappeared and I'm still working with people, I'm going to be far more educated than if I just read some more books and took some more functional medicine training.
Absolutely. Man, this has been amazing, Evan. I can't thank you enough for helping me. Thank you so much for sharing these amazing action steps. And that's what this is, action steps, not just information, to help the listeners step out of brain dysfunction, disorders, disease, and into a productive, high-performing, focused, supercharged mind. Thanks again, Evan.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that talk. I don't have much else to say, but thank you for listening if you made it to the end. If you do want to reach out, I love working on the brain with people. It's amazing because you'll have clients go to these neurologists and they only end up prescribing medication for the brain. And a lot of the medication causes side effects and causes more brain problems. So when we get to the root cause of gut issues and we start to bring in nutrients to address the brain health, we're using things like vinpocetine or Bacopa or ginkgo. Bilberry is great as well. These things really increase brain function. They increase the blood flow in the brain. And also, I'm a really huge fan of using herbal anti-inflammatories for the brain too. I mean, using turmeric, using resveratrol. There's so many good things you can do naturally to address brain health, whether it's headaches and migraines to neuroinflammation, even some of the mast cell activation problems and chemical sensitivity problems that's usually tied into the brain being, quote, on fire. That stuff works like a charm. So man, I love working on the brain as much as I love working on the gut. If you want to reach out, you can do so at my website, evanbrand.com. And there's a 15-minute free call available. That's with Megan Gump. She's also functional medicine certified. She's been working with me for several years, been trained on all my protocols. You can just book that on the site. You'll click free intro call. And you can chat with Megan about what's going on with you. We look forward to helping you out. You take good care of yourself. In the meantime, we'll talk next week. Bye.